Hello and welcome to the Life Care Services Health Services Division podcast. I'm your host for today, Tony Galvan, Director of Health and Wellness. And with me today is Colin Milner, CEO of the International Council on Active Aging. How are you doing today, Colin?
I'm doing real well. Thanks, Tony. And thanks for having me back.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been a little over a year that Colin and I did a kickoff podcast, and we just started talking about the kind of what's next, you know, the evolution of wellness, where is it going, industry-wide within senior living. So that was one of our early episodes. I think it was in the lower or mid-teens episode that we did that. So it's actually a great point in time to have a second conversation with Colin, and the impetus for asking Colin to do a follow-up podcast was a recent publication that the International Council on Active Aging recently released and came out with, and it's their business case for wellness programs in senior living. And I saw the alert, the notification come through. I think I saw it on Facebook or LinkedIn, one of the two, and I immediately went to download it and started checking it out. A really great summary and recap as to why wellness continues to make sense and how the viability of communities having comprehensive and effective wellness programs is just it's not going away, and if anything, it's more and more of a priority as time continues to pass. So as I read the white paper, I immediately reached out to Colin and his team and requested that, you know, that we have a conversation just to talk a little bit more about it, because certainly within Life Care Services, this continues to be an area of priority and focused at the corporate organizational level, and that's as a product of how our communities and the residents that are looking to become residents, remain residents, and prospects that are looking to become residents consider wellness to be so important. And more we continue to also see how those parties or groups that we're trying to do business with from a healthcare perspective are also deeming the idea of health and wellness both preventatively and reactively from a post-acute standpoint becoming a very relevant part of what they're seeking in different organizations that they're trying to partner with. So to me, this has always been just an incredibly important resource that you all have put out there. And Colin, when I think about the kind of the first iteration of your business case, can you remind us when exactly did that come out?
Oh, that came out, if my memory is correct, in 2013. So it came out quite a few years ago. And, you know, one of the things that was needed back then and is still needed today, Tony, is that especially the more that wellness grows and expands, is that people are really beginning to look at what is the value that wellness brings to the organization overall, and being able to help highlight that. Not only makes it easier for someone who is doing their job in the wellness department, but it makes it easier for someone who is investing in it from the CFO or CEO level to really truly understand what the value of wellness is for the organization right across the board.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Colin, that you mentioned 2013. And when I think about the timeline of just sort of wellness importance and relevance within senior living, it was right around that junction too, I think, organizationally, that I could speak certainly for Life Care Services, where the idea of providing tools and resources that would help communities formalize that brand and framework for wellness really started coming into focus for us organizationally. And I remember you know, that first instance of that white paper. And to me, it's always been, and I imagine for others that are in some sort of a leadership management director role, whether it's at the community or corporate level, it's kind of our mini Bible, that white paper. And it's something that I could reference, several presentations and templates. When I think about, at least for myself, going out there and instilling the value of why wellness, that has been and continues to be a resource that I go to, and it really it kind of helps me walk through you know, why it is that communities need to strongly consider, again, having comprehensive wellness programming in place, and to be able to really articulate and differentiate what makes their wellness program in particular different or better than what their competition might be doing. And so thinking back to 2013 in particular, I think even if you rewind a little bit further and maybe you go even 10 years ago, or 2008, and even a little bit prior, I think it's consensus out there that wellness used to be kind of a nice to have. It was the light and fluffy, however you defined wellness, whether it was limited to activities, whether it was limited to fitness, it was something that people knew you had to have because you needed to have, again, quote unquote, activities. But even as of a decade, maybe 12 or so years ago, again, the credibility, the robustness, and ultimately the value behind what it meant to truly have a holistic, multidimensional approach to wellness really wasn't there. So I think of, I'm just going back to your point on when your first white paper came out, I think it's no mistake that 5 years later, the relevance that wellness has within the senior living landscape is where it's at.
Well, I think that a lot of people were looking for information at the time to support it, because you're right. You know, years ago, wellness was very fluffy. People couldn't put their hands around it. You know, it was a term that was used, but what does it really mean? You know, and it's like any other term, and that is that it means whatever you make it to be. And since then, we have seen a significant uptick in wellness initiatives across the country, actually across the world. You know, it used to be that people would take a small apartment and knock down the walls and create their wellness center with donated fitness equipment, and you know, it wouldn't be staffed and so forth. And that has changed significantly. Now you see people building beautiful centers, standalone centers, or very well appointed centers, and also the staffing. The staffing really is what brings it to life. And when you talk about staffing, you talk about cost. And that's why something like the business case for wellness always comes into play, because people are always looking at cost recovery or profit or being able to bring in new sources of revenue that can, you know, add to not only the bottom line, but also, you know, the cost recovery, as I mentioned. So I think that there is a wonderful trend that has been taking place where wellness is no longer a nice to have. It's now really a have to have if you are part of your, or if you're looking at part of your competitive advantage with other communities that are doing the exact same thing.
And so as you think about what you've been able to even further unfold over the last handful of years, in particular, as we start thinking about even in the last 5 years, the evolution, talk a little bit about what motivated you and your team to sort of refresh the white paper again 5 years ago. Was that something that had always been on your roadmap, or what brought you to the conclusion that 2018 made sense? It had been 5 years. What went into deciding let's refresh this white paper?
I think, like everything, people are always looking for the latest data, the latest information. And if you're speaking with someone, it's great to have data from years ago, but it's always best to have the most current information. So number one is that we looked at what needed to be refreshed, and that was one of our papers that needed to be refreshed. But also where wellness is today, it is something that when we're speaking with CEOs and CFOs and vice presidents and presidents and so forth, as you mentioned, it's something that comes up in the conversation all the time. So we wanted to make sure that we had something that was relevant for today, even though it applies years ago and will apply in the future. We just simply felt the numbers needed to match where we were and also show the progression over those last 5-10 years through different surveys that ICAA has done. And there has been a very significant progression.
That's interesting. And so as we jump into the actual white paper itself, I think one of the smartest things that you guys did was to immediately get into the market environment. It just sets the tone again for the demand component of wellness and how you see specific demographics shifting. So as we think about what has changed in the last handful of years in particular, what was sort of the bottom line with the market environment and how that's evolved from 2013 to today?
Structure. To me, the environment itself has evolved where, communities are now looking more at lifestyle. They're looking, beyond just a care environment. And I don't mean that in a derogatory manner. I mean, we're all looking for where things are going. And as we look to who our future customer is or future resident is, we need to really take into consideration what they will expect. So we're seeing more and more of that. But what we're also seeing is the professionalization and structure around wellness that maybe wasn't there 5, 10 years, 15 years ago. We're seeing more organized thinking behind it, such as the chart that we created in that section, where it will actually look at what some of the short-term, mid-term, and long-term returns are for you on wellness, whether it's the investment or the return and objectives or your return and investment long-term. But a lot of times we weren't really thinking like that, or at least a lot of the people I spoke with weren't thinking like that. They were busy thinking about how can I create a fitness center? And then now that they began to get into wellness, it was like, okay, but we're still doing a lot of fitness as our wellness. So as you begin to look at going beyond that, the first thing is, how do I invest in a comprehensive wellness program? And what does that really look like? And what impact is that going to have on my residents, their quality of life, and the bottom line, and all of these things? And, to really establish all of that is why we brought in the ICAA wellness benchmarks, to try and provide some structure and some data behind that could help people actually create the framework for their organizations. Because your organization versus somebody else's is very different, even though there are many similarities. So, our goal was to create a framework that you could then put information in underneath that was very specific to your organization.
That makes total sense, Colin. When we think about also the market environment, I think a default mentality for senior living providers, and especially those that are a little closer to the wellness programming side of things, is they oftentimes default to thinking about the baby boomers, and rightfully so. Certainly in the next several decades, it's going to be a significant impact on how our industry looks and feels and what we're delivering. And we think, again, oftentimes about the correlation with how that demographic appreciates, desires, and in many ways expects wellness to be there. I think there's a balance between the spectrum of what will happen again in the coming decades, and then what we're dealing with now, what we're dealing with present day. And I think of wellness managers and directors that are out there, and the groups of residents that present day are there, and what their wellness interests look like. From your standpoint, how does that look and feel to you when you consider the market environment, and how did your white paper balance, again, what will happen, the senior tsunami, quote unquote, that, you know, that we're all expecting to happen, but again, balancing it with what we're currently experiencing present day?
So I think, you know, what we have, Tony, is that we have, as you mentioned, a significant demographic shift that's happening. And all of that is being driven by the fact that there are more people who are living longer. And, you know, our attitudes around that are all changing. But to me, it comes back to one very simple fact, and that is, given the choice, most people would prefer to age well. So if that is so, how do we help them achieve that? How do we inspire them to achieve that? You know, that is right across all generations. There's very few people that I have ever met that says, you know, I want to get sick. I want to have someone take care of me. And I understand that that's just the way life is going to be. So if we start with the end result in mind, and that is, how do we help someone remain well, working backwards becomes a lot easier than trying to fight, is it a boomer generation? Is it the current generation? Is it silent GI generation? All these different elements. I would look at it more from the perspective of, okay, what does the end consumer, the end user, the resident want? And that is to be loved, to age well, and to enjoy their full or their life as fully as possible. So if that's the case, how do we help them achieve that? Well, we help them achieve that through offering various services, various programs, and the ability for people to make their own choices to accomplish that. And that is irrespective of whether you're a boomer or my parents at the age of 80, who, you know, my father just passed away. And one of the reasons that he left us, in my mind, early was because he chose not to age well, where my mother, on the other hand, has chosen to age well or live well. So there is a significant focus in my mind that's happening in the industry now to help people to accomplish that. You know, we talk about lifestyle, we talk about building all of these things, but if we come back to the end result, I think it will drive what we do, and that is, let's just simply help people to live well and age well.
Well, and I think that's such an important perspective, and I really appreciate that framework, actually, and I think it's something that our listeners could really apply immediately, because I think we have a spectrum again of sightedness, where, you know, we have some communities and some leaders that really want to position themselves again for eventually what will happen, and they, you know, they want to adopt and they want to get on board with as many things health and wellness as they can, and then we have others that maybe are thinking, you know, that's really not something, it's still so far away. I need to be concerned with, you know, the residents that I'm dealing with now. And so hearing how to a degree it's generationally independent, it's generationally agnostic, it doesn't really matter. And if you take more of that global approach that you're indicating, that's really the framework, that's the mindset. And so regardless of that, you know, there's a space and there's a spot for wellness within what they're doing.
Before I forget, which is one of the things that comes with my age, and that is, you know, one of the things that I would look at is, you know, coming back to what is the mission of the organization. And, you know, most organizations that I've run into have improving quality of life in their mission statement. Well, if that's one of your drivers, how do you actually do that? And how can you improve quality of life without offering wellness? You know, I mean, in reality. So I think it all comes back to what's the mission of the organization and what's the end result that you want people to walk away from or with. And then you build your whole framework, your whole story between those two. And that's what creates a dynamic wellness culture. It's not building a building, putting in some equipment, and expecting people to come, as an example. We see that fail all across the country. What brings things to life is when the culture is geared to life enhancement, life change, and the staff is helping to drive that.
That makes total sense. Getting a little further into the white paper, Colin, I think it's important to just, again, for the listeners out there, give them some context behind just some of the methodology and where, when we think about a lot of the data and the metrics that support your findings, you know, we know that a lot stemmed from one of the initiatives that you've had over the last several years as well, which is your ICAA Pro Matura wellness benchmarking program/initiative. And so given that throughout the conversation, we're going to refer to that quite a bit. We're going to reference a lot of these statistics and numbers, and you've done separate publications on some of those benchmarks, updating and whatnot. But could you provide just a very high level brief summary of what that initiative is, what it entails, and how it ties into the white paper?
Sure. You know, many years ago, one of our members, Terry Cunliffe, came up to us and said, can you help me justify my position? Now, this is very, you know, many years ago. She was trying to justify her wellness program within her community. And that dawned on me that there was a real issue there if you had to justify something as holistic and impactful as wellness. But I also own a business and realize that I too have to justify where I spend my money. So what we did was we sat down with Pro Matura and we created a benchmark system that would look at people's activity levels. What were they doing? What were they engaged in? And what impact did that actually have on their ability to live a better quality of life, to live in a community longer, which then, of course, impacted the bottom line of the community significantly and is a benefit for individuals who are in that. So what we know, as an example, is that for those in independent living who actually participate in wellness programs, that according to the data of 664, just over 100 communities, that basically it showed they lived 2.7 years longer in an independent living community. Well, you know, that really shouldn't come as a surprise to us, because if somebody is healthier, they're probably going to have less issues and they're probably going to live longer and healthier. So, you know, if all you have to do is look at the science, but what it does give is it gives a number that to at least someone that owns or operates a community can start at least using as a benchmark for their community, understanding that if we deliver these programs, our residents will live longer in here. They'll actually be happier, which is what the benchmarks also showed, and they'll have a better quality of life. And because of that, they will refer more people. And actually, close to half of them, 44% of them, came to the community probably in the first place because of the wellness program. So the overall impact is significant. But we would have never had that if we didn't stop and take a breath, put together a system, and take a look. Now, are there things that are missing in the system? Absolutely. Are there things that we could add? we could add so much more. The question is, what is needed for you to justify the expense around the program, which is what most CFOs are looking for, and that's what we focused on.
Yeah, I appreciate that summary. I think that's so important because you think about what validates, some of the conclusions that you're putting out in your white paper. And again, especially with something so specific, like you're making the business case for wellness programs. And so there had better be some good validity and reliability behind again, the methods and how you're doing the behind the scenes research to really come up with the numbers that support some of those conclusions. So I appreciate that overview. And certainly our listeners can go to your website and they can, learn more about the ProMatura benchmarking program. I think you've come out with at least a couple, if not more, publications on the just some of the findings through the different organizations that have participated. So folks can grab some more information on your website.
Legal disclaimer. Life Care Services LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.